This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
I'm Glenda Geek from Ocala, Florida, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for November 13th, 2012, episode 530. Good morning, Horse World. Horses in the Morning, as you know, is now live Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Today, we bring you a highlight show from the Horse Radio Network to enjoy. If you caught this show already, please feel free to join us again live tomorrow morning on Horses in the Morning when the whole gang will be back, Jamie, Jennifer, and I. And, of course, you can catch all the past episodes of Horses in the Morning at horsesinthemorning.com or subscribe on iTunes by searching for Horses in the Morning. Today's feature episode is the Eventing Radio Show, episode number 221 by Bit of Britain. Host Samantha Clark caught up with James Alliston, who was at Galway Downs in California, same one as Jamie was at, and he took first, second, and sixth place in the CCI three-star, winning the event for the second year in a row. And also, Samantha caught up with Doug Payne, who talks about indoor eventing at the Royal Horse Show in Canada, which we talked about here on our show last week. So take a listen to this terrific episode right after this word from Fleeceworks.
Fleeceworks manufactures pure Australian merino sheepskin and merino wool saddle pads and accessories. Their pads produce a vital thermal balancing layer to pull excess moisture and heat away from the horse's back, allowing muscles to work at maximum capacity without overheating. Fleeceworks Australian merino wool is breathable and hydrophilic, able to hold and store 35% of its own weight in liquid. A longtime staple of the medical field, Australian merino fibers have no equal when it comes to delivering a temperature-controlled, pressure-absorbing layer. The Fleeceworks philosophy, minimum bulk, maximum performance, and they have a variety of anatomically correct pads incorporating technologies and designs that address the individual needs of every horse and rider. Ask for Fleeceworks saddle pads and accessories by name at your local tack and feed store, or visit them online at fleeceworks.com.
Welcome to the Eventing Radio Show. I'm Samantha Clark in Lexington, Kentucky.
And I'm back. It's John Kyle in London, England.
Just in time for Guy Fawkes Day. Welcome back, John. How are you?
Yeah, it seems to have settled down now, but it did feel slightly like I was living in a war zone about half an hour ago with all the thunder flashes and fireworks going off for Guy Fawkes.
Well done. I miss that, actually, and that's something that, you know, my children will never know, poor things. But they do get 4th of July, which, you know, not quite such a fun reason to celebrate. Well, I suppose Independence Day, depends how you look at it. But much more fun to blow up, to celebrate someone who tried to blow up Parliament, I think.
Well, a few years ago, Pippa and I, we went on the London Eye on the evening of the 5th of November, and we got to watch all of the fireworks out further
over. Romantic.
Very nice.
How could you have not proposed to her up there, John? When are you going to pull your finger out and do something about that?
It's ridiculous. I'm not going to be browbeaten on air by the likes of you, Clark.
Well, talking of which, you weren't here last week. You gave me some excuse. Oh, I'm travelling. I'm going to Lyon. I've been to wherever I've been to and blah, blah. And then you forget that when you're on Twitter, you're exposed. You went and saw James Bond instead of recording the Eventing Radio Show with me.
Yeah, it's really important that I see James Bond as early as possible.
Skyfall. I can't wait. The premiere is on Thursday night here in the States, and it happens to be my daughter's 11th birthday, so I'm dragging her there. So that'll be my treat to her for her birthday, and we'll also take my 9-year-old son, because it is PG-13, I'm hoping. So we'll go to that at midnight 01 on Thursday. I can't wait to see Daniel Craig. Oh, heaven. So that's my exciting week. But For news of the eventing world, huge congratulations, massive congratulations to Alice and William Fox Pitt on the birth of their baby girl and as yet unnamed filly that was born just after Poe. Perfect timing. She came in a whopping £9.1. So well done, Alice, and well done. Congratulations to William. And
oh, and congratulations to Alice, because the full lineup of presenters for Channel 4 taking over the racing coverage in Great Britain was announced this week, and Alice is very much part of that as well. So that's something for her to look forward to alongside the new baby next year.
For everyone to look forward to. The more Alice, the better. And we also have good news from badminton that will return in 2014. That will resume its later date in May. So I'm hoping no more cancellations from now on. So, and then also Mitsubishi have re-signed. They'll be continuing their sponsorship. So that's also very good news. They're very loyal sponsors.
I understand, first of all, Mitsubishi are now the longest, or have been for some time now, the longest running sponsorship deal in our sport. They are huge supporters, and we must salute them for that. I understand that the badminton thing, because we're going back to finishing on a Sunday as well, was in negotiation with the BBC, who are going to be the main broadcasters, because previously it had been thought that we could get more airtime by being on the Monday, and with the sport mix that the BBC had then, that was the case. But with the sport mix that they have now live on a Sunday, we're going to get badminton with the cross-country highlights play out, and then the top jumping going out as live. So that's good news.
And I think also it will be helpful for the riders who try and do Rolex and badminton back-to-back. That's got to help them.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see Rolex dates might happen with them, because they've been pushed a little earlier, and there was a little bit of a dice over the dates a couple of years as well. So whether Rolex might move a tiny bit as well with badminton going back. I mean, I think its traditional dates was about the 16th to the 20th of May.
Mm. Well, and who, you never can count on the weather here, so we'll see what happens. I know that, you know, I don't remember 2 years ago, we all had to rush to the indoor arena because of the tornado warning. So if we could avoid that, that would be nice too. But meanwhile, on the West Coast, we had beautiful weather, apparently. I wasn't there, but Galway Downs took place under, you know, typical California sunshine skies.
Hi, Glenn here from the Horse Radio Network, and I am with Cassie from Bit of Britain with our Bit of Britain Holiday Product of the Week.
Thanks, Glenn. Well, the holidays are fast approaching, as pretty much every store you've entered for the last month has reminded you with seasonal music and decorations. To help all our fans and customers get ready for the holiday season, Bit of Britain has a full selection of gifts for everyone from the recreational horse enthusiast to the serious show rider on your list. And we'll start off today by talking about the popular eventing calendar, which is back for the fifth year in a row. This year, the 2013 eventing calendar is produced by the Chronicle of the Horse, which has covered all disciplines of horse sport for more than 75 years. And the eventing calendar features 13 full-color photographs of the best international event horses and riders, as well as up-and-coming riders. This is perfect for the eventing addict in your life, since the calendar comes marked with the dates for the Rolex, badminton, and Burley four-star events, of course, the Grand Slam of eventing. And then new this year, Bit of Britain offers the 2013 Dressage Calendar and the 2013 100 Jumper Calendar. Also produced by the Chronicle of the Horse, these calendars feature the quality photography the Chronicle has become known for in its 75 years of journalistic excellence. So no matter what discipline you enjoy, Bit of Britain's got you covered, basically. And all these calendars are priced at $19.95 and are available at bitofbritain.com.
And you can find all those calendars at bitofbritain.com. Just go to bitofbritain.com and search for calendar, and they'll pop up there. Some terrific pictures, and you're absolutely right about the Chronicle. They have some of the best photography.
Yeah, no, definitely. They've worked hard to have that reputation. And don't forget, just as a reminder, if you're heading up to Equine Affair in West Springfield, Massachusetts this weekend, be sure to stop by the Bit of Britain booth in the Better Living Center.
Thanks again, Molly. And now let's hear what James Alliston had to say about Galway.
Well, congratulations on a fantastic weekend.
Thank you.
Brilliant. Where do we even start? I mean, three in the top 10 at the three-star at Galway. I mean, it certainly is your event.
Yeah, no. You know, for sure the horses seem to enjoy going at that venue, and they went well last year. Jake won in the spring there, and Sibley was second in the spring. So it seems to be a lucky event for me.
Well, you must enjoy it too. Can we talk? How much do you think that makes a difference? The fact that you obviously feel comfortable there and go in feeling fairly confident, even though you said you weren't sure about Jake, but you must go in. You obviously enjoy the event and like it. Does that make a big difference, do you think, to you in the way you ride? And then does that translate to the horses?
Yeah, for sure. I think so. You know, I think when you've had success at a venue, especially. Well, even on different horses, but especially on the same horse, and you're riding the same horse, and he kind of knows the lay of the land, and he's gone well there before. I think for sure, maybe it gives me confidence, and then it goes down the reins and gives the horse confidence. So yeah, I think it definitely makes a big difference.
And how many times have you ridden at Galway Downs?
I rode there the first time in the spring of 2010, and then I rode there in the fall of 2010, and then the spring last year and the fall last year, and then spring this year and fall last year. So I guess six times in total.
How do you top it? Each time it gets better and better. I dread to think what you'll have to pull out the bag next year. And I'm sure the other competitors do too. Let's talk a little bit. This year, Robert Kellerhouse was, he'd brought in his Oasis on the cross country, which brought in more crowds. Yeah. Was that different? Did you notice the bigger crowds, and did your horses notice the difference as you were galloping cross country?
Yeah, I think for sure. There were groupings of spectators more spread around the course. Like I think last year, maybe most people were kind of around the trade fair area and like on the by the cross-country control commentary tower, but now there were kind of people more spread out around the course, and you could hear kind of clapping and cheering as you went around all the way around, which was really nice.
Do you feel that you have an advantage knowing the lay of the land so well, and that's an advantage? You know, you had three inside the time. Is that helpful?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I've ridden that track a lot of times, obviously, and I think it's quite a flat track, so I think if you have a horse that's quite quick, I think the time, most of the competitions has been pretty gettable. Maybe not so much at the CICs, but certainly the CCIs, I think just the terrain lends itself to making the time quite achievable if you're on a quick horse.
Let's talk about the horses individually. Let's go to Tivoli first. You know, he's... very difficult, you said, and you got him from Oliver Town and did one event, and then famously didn't compete him for a year and a half. What did you do with him at home for that time?
I kind of just hacked around, just tried to settle him, and I was a little bit like, oh, what have I gotten into a little bit, but and then I show jumped him. I took him to some show jumping shows. And just did that, and that seems to really help, because you go for a week and just jump around a day or a couple of rounds a day, and just I think just getting him away from the cross country and not having him do that every time he went out to a place, I think just settled him down a little bit. So I think that was really helpful.
Are you the only one who rides him at home, or can other people ride him?
No. He's fine. Yeah, I'm the only one that jumps him, but the girls ride him on the flat and hack him around, and they know him pretty well now as well. So, when he starts getting a little lamped up, normally we just kind of just walk him and see if he'll just settle, because he's one of those ones that once he gets a little bit worried and starts getting hot, you can't work him through it. You won't tire him out, which is great for the cross country because he'll go all day. But you can't work him through anything. You just have to kind of just walk and see if he'll just settle, and then try it again.
And you said that you work him once in the morning, but then you don't warm him up before his dressage. You literally just go straight in.
Yeah. The last two shows he's done. He got a 48 last time out, and then I think 49 or something this time out. So they're decent scores. And I just went in cold And I literally walked around the arena, picked up the camera, went up the center line, and that seems to just keep the most relaxed. So, yeah, that's what I've been doing, and I'll probably do that in the future, I think.
What is his future? What will you do next with him?
I think I would like to. We'll see how the spring goes. But I think I would like to do Rolex, really. I think he's a really, cross country is probably his strongest phase, and he's very brave and very bold and a lot of scope. So I look forward to that, hopefully.
Yeah. And let's talk, Jumbo's Jake, who's was the winner last year and has done Rolex twice now, I think. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah.
He came, and you said that he'd been eliminated at Woodside for at a corner, and then you walked the course and your heart sank when you saw all the corners, but he pulled out all the stops and gave you another beautiful clear to come second.
Yeah, no, he was fantastic. Obviously, I was a little concerned that the last run did not go according to plan, and that was a bit concerning, obviously, coming into it, and I wasn't sure whether I should be doing a three-star, really. But like I say, you know, he's gone really well at this event throughout his career. So, and I practiced a little bit at home and changed a bit, which maybe it's a mental thing, but I think when you make a little change like that, sometimes it helps. And yeah, he was awesome, fantastic. I think he was 2 seconds over the time, but yeah, it gave me a great ride.
And what did he give you any hesitation at all, or did he just come out the start box and he was completely back to normal? Do you think Woodside was just a little blip? I mean, what was that?
I mean, I think he lost his confidence a little bit this summer, and because he's a really careful horse, you know, when you see him jump, he's super, super tight with the legs, and like, he's probably one of the only horses I've ridden that he'll literally go around a cross-country course without rubbing a single fence. You know, and when you go on that quick, that's quite impressive, you know. And so sometimes when he does rub one or whatever, or has a little bit of a rough moment, it rocks his confidence. So I think he's just one you have to be. I think the start of the course is really important for him. If I get a good start and get his confidence, and then you can build up the speed from there a little bit. But I think starting out the course well and not giving him a fright early on is really the key.
Yeah. And then you still had another ride. I mean, you didn't get to enjoy any of Robert's entertainment on cross country, and you actually only just made it on the second horse, didn't you? Because you had three horses in a field of 12, so you were a quarter of the field, if that's my maths is correct. So your third horse, tell us about that.
Parker, he's pretty experienced horse, and like, fantastic cross-country horse, really. He's really, really fast, and he's quite strong, really, but if you steer him for the jumps, normally he's pretty careful with his legs too, and he'll find a way to get over it. So it was a bit strong, maybe a bit more strong than I would have liked, but he's very honest, very straight, and jumped around well.
Is Parker the only one you own, or do you own Parker?
I own Parker, and I own Tivoli with Chuck and Peggy Moore. Well, that's a partnership we have on that horse. And then India McAvoy owns Jumbo's Jake.
Okay. And I understand, I was there last year at Galway, and it was pissing with rain and freezing cold. And I understand it was completely the opposite, and sunny blue skies and beautiful this weekend. So I'm glad that you got to enjoy that nice weather, and that your parents, your lucky omens, were there with you this weekend too. So please send them all my love. And will they stay a bit longer now and enjoy some California sunshine with you?
I think so. I think my mom is going to stay for a couple of weeks and just hang out, and now we have a bit of downtime, so we can enjoy California. And I think my dad has to go back, I think, maybe in a few days, but we'll have time to get a few games of golf in and relax, I think.
Good. And you're in California, obviously you don't suffer from the winters that we do here, and you don't go to Florida, but what will you do with the horses over the winter? Do you take a break? Will you show jump? What do you do in California?
Yeah, we just, that's what I'm doing right now, actually. I just dropped one off at a field where, a friend's field, where it'll hang out for a few months on holiday. And then India McAvoy's family, and my vet, Paul McAvoy, they have a nice place up in Santa Rosa, which is in the wine country of California, and that's Jumbo's Jake and Parker always holiday there after Rolex or after Galway and the pool. So they'll have a nice break, and I'll pull the back shoes and let them relax and pick at the grass. And then, I think we start up again end of February, so maybe bring them in probably 1st of January, maybe a bit before, and go again.
And do your spring campaign on the West Coast. It's become quite a familiar story that you sort of fly a little bit under the radar, then win everything going at all those big West Coast events, and suddenly everyone's talking about you. You didn't have, if you don't mind me saying, the best. I think everyone, you know, came and watched you at Rolex last year. It was an Olympic year, and Yogi was there, and you had quite a ton of pressure on you. Is there anything that you think you've learned from going through that last year that maybe you'll do differently this year if you come, or next year if you come to Rolex in the spring again?
Yeah, for sure. I did many, many things that I shouldn't have done probably at that one, and the logistics wise, aside from the riding, there's certainly many things I'm going to change from that, because it was, I went in expecting to, the horses were on great form and they'd gone well there last year, and I was expecting pretty big things, and it was a bit of a nightmare, really. It couldn't have gone much worse. So, we'll change. I think it doesn't make sense to do the same thing again, so we'll change it up a little bit, and hopefully different result.
yeah. Who do you train with in California, James?
I Gerd Reuter, who's actually in Charlottesville, Virginia. We fly him out for clinics, and he's who I work with, and he's been a great help, and we've really turned Tivoli around on the dressage, I think, and for sure Parker, although Parker didn't have the greatest test this weekend, he won the last time out and was second before that, which, really that horse has not been that competitive just because of his dressage holding him back. But it's nice that he can get in the winner's circle now because he gets a bit of a better start in the first place. So that's really thanks to Gerd. And
And then you have quite a few younger horses coming out. I know Lily, my daughter, loves Mojo, and he did well this weekend.
Yeah. I let him down. I felt really bad. He in the show jumping, he's a real good show jumper, and you can normally, bet your house on a clear round on that one. And I let him down in a big way and had two down, which were entirely my fault. So I was a little bit mad at myself because I think he would have been, I don't know where he would have finished, but he would have been up there. And the dressage, he can do very well on the flat as well, and he got a little bit tight in the dressage. So I think he's definitely one for the future, that horse. This weekend wasn't his weekend, really, for, maybe a few mistakes from me cost him a better result. But I think, that one probably I won't give so much of a holiday. I'll work on the flying changes and stuff, and I think for sure next year we can step him up to advance.
Great. Well, lots to look forward to. And thank you so much for talking to us. And we'll speak to you again soon. And again, lots of love to your parents. And we look forward to seeing you in the spring. Thanks, James.
Glenn the Geek here, founder of the Horse Radio Network. We are excited to bring you a special holiday helmet mini-series, giving the gift of safety, purchasing a helmet for your loved ones at Christmas. In cooperation with Charles Owen and Riders for Helmets, we have created this 6-part mini-series to highlight some amazing real-life stories and some tips on buying helmets as gifts. This is a series of short segments that will run on this show over the next 6 weeks. This week, we speak with Roy from Charles Owen on the importance of helmet fit, and next week, we'll hear the amazing story of recovery from someone who was saved by her helmet. Well, hi, Roy. Thank you so much for joining us on this special holiday helmet mini-series. We appreciate you being part of it.
It's great to be part of something that we're so passionate about.
Tell us a little bit about Charles Owen. A lot of people have heard the name, and some are very familiar with it because they wear the helmets, but there are others who are not.
Well, Charles Owen was started by my grandfather back in 1911. So we've been involved in helmets for over 100 years. The Our first motorcycle helmet was actually produced in 1928, and we got our first horse racing helmet in 1938, which was actually won by the winner of the Grand National at the time.
Can I ask what they were made out of back then?
Oh, they were made of shellac and linen combination.
Okay.
So, and then we had draw laces and concussion tapes, and then cork started to come in to be used as a shock absorber before we now get into the more modern materials.
Huh. Oh, very interesting. Okay.
So Charles Owen really was trying to produce helmets that were very much at the leading edge, and we got involved very early on, back in the early 50s, in the standards committees, which actually helped to develop the attributes of a helmet and what we need in a helmet, and develop the research from the doctors and the accident research people to really understand what we were trying to produce.
You know, obviously up to modern day, where you have a wide selection and variety of helmets at Charles Owen to cover a number of disciplines.
Oh, yes. We have the largest range of safety products, which allows people to really decide on their own style. They're not kind of wearing a helmet for a helmet's sake, but now it's become very much part of the outfit. And we've seen this now with the dressage communities now starting to come on board, and they are looking for their own style to complement their overall picture.
And as we get through this series over the next couple of weeks, we're going to talk a little bit about style and function, and also we're going to talk about understanding the standards and the certifications and everything that goes into helmets so people know what they're looking for when they go shopping for one. Today, we want to talk a little bit about helmet fit, and you know, we're talking in this series about giving the gift of safety, basically purchasing a helmet for your loved ones at the holidays, at Christmas time, how it's the perfect gift. But one of the things that we have to be aware of is fit, don't we?
Oh, absolutely. And there is, I must totally agree with, there is no better gift than giving the gift of safety. And often when people approach this, they spend a lot of time perusing what type of model they're going to buy and the, you know, trying to understand the technologies that people are talking about. But really, that's very much only part of the story. It's thinking about how do you get the helmet to fit the person you're buying the helmet for. I mean, there are many, many accidents that we investigate where helmets have not fit properly and the person has had either a severe injury or has actually died just because the helmet didn't fit. There was nothing wrong with the helmet, but the helmet actually shifted during the accident and exposed the head, and that's not given, and so you got no protection at all.
Now, as far as helmet fit itself is concerned, they are to be fairly snug, and the general rule of thumb I always heard was like a finger's length above the eyebrow.
I mean, some people, depending on the depth of your head, depends on how far it comes down. And some people really do like to have the helmet right down on the eyebrows so they can see the edge of the helmet. It kind of gives them that ring of confidence that they've got something that's going to protect them. But the general rule is, yes, about 3/4 inch above the eyebrows allows a little bit of air to get into the forehead and keep the rider cool. I often, for people who've never experienced a helmet, I normally say it's a bit like buying a new pair of boots or a new pair of good shoes. They're going to be supportive, they're going to be a little bit tight, and you're not going to expect to wear them for 8 hours on the first outing. So often with a new helmet, to try it wearing it around the house rather than actually on horseback. So if it does get a little bit tight in the place, you can just lift the helmet. Because what happens is if you have an area of tightness, your head expands in that part of tightness. And of course, because you've made your head bigger in that area, it actually makes it tighter. And so therefore you get this whole vicious circle of pain and tightness. So just lifting the helmet off your head allows your head to revert to its original head shape, and the helmet would have been stretched a little bit in that place. So just wearing it for an hour or so, just around the house, will help to break in the helmet. And the more often you put it on and off your head, it's the best way to break a helmet in. So the fit of the helmet is really important. And of course, when you're buying it for somebody else, you need to have a few strategies to arrange a correct helmet for them. So maybe the first strategy, which is kind of the easiest, is if the person's already got a helmet and you're thinking, this helmet's getting a bit tired, maybe we need, you know, they would like to have a new fresh helmet of the same style, you can obviously look inside the helmet and take a note of the model and the size, and of course just order a replacement for them, hoping that their original helmet fit okay. But of course, often when we do helmet checks, we find that helmets don't fit okay. Sometimes people have got helmets that are three sizes too big for them, and so you have to have another strategy for this. So we would always suggest you find a local retailer. In fact, we do a lot of training of retailers and give and issue certification certificates to the employees that we actually train. Because obviously it's not the store that we train, it's the individuals inside it. And if that individual isn't serving you, then you're not going to be getting the best experience. So that's the first thing to search, and if you do have a problem finding somebody, then we would only be too happy over our website to answer any questions about finding a retailer that would suit. So thinking about you're not sure what type of helmet is going to work for them, the first thing is simply getting a gift card for them, which specifies that you want to have this gift card go towards a helmet purchase. And most retailers will issue a gift card. Now, if we want to step it up a bit and really kind of get this sense that you're trying to give a gift of safety, then maybe having the card for an appointment with a professional helmet fitter would actually really emphasize that you do take care. This is not just a product you're purchasing. You're actually going to be purchasing an experience for them, and they're actually perhaps very, very first time in their life they might have actually been going for a professional helmet fitting. So talk to your local retailer about whether that's something they can offer. Something else that you could do if you're just feeling that you can't arrange for that helmet fitting to take place is perhaps buying something a little bit on the larger size. Because, you know, when you open up the present, the worst thing is when you can't even get the helmet on your head. So buying something a little bit on the big side. But there's a big warning here. A lot of stores will not accept return helmets. They often have it. So if you are going to buy something that you're intending to return or have it refitted, do make sure that the store is going to be happy, because some stores will only allow gift certificates and won't allow you to return the helmet. And then, of course, that's a real nightmare.
And I might offer another alternative, too, is that you take the person early, forget about the surprise, tell them you're buying the helmet for them for the holidays, and let them start wearing it right away. So they get the protection immediately, and you still are getting them the gift of safety. So,
that's a great, great suggestion. Now, an area that a lot of people ignore about fitting, and in fact, some stores actually don't do this for you because they expect the customer to do it themselves, is adjusting the harness. They kind of fit the helmet on your head and then they just kind of leave you to do the straps. So when you have the helmet fitted, do make sure that they take care to adjust the strap underneath your chin as well as the adjustment systems at the rear of the head. Because if those systems are not adjusted correctly, it's quite possible for the helmet to actually fly off the head during the fall. And, of course, then the whole of the rest of the fitting system has been rendered useless.
Something else that I've seen a thousand times over, and a lot of people don't realize that if your current helmet is more than 5 years old, you should replace it.
I mean, 5 years of, you know, an average user. I mean, if you're somebody that rides every day, it's probably going to be a shorter life than that.
Where can people learn more about the Charles Owens helmets that are available for the holidays?
Well, our website is a great place to start. It has all our whole range, but it's always worthwhile just popping down to your local retailer who has a good selection of helmets.
Thank you, Roy. We'll be back again next time to talk about the standards and certifications inside a helmet and what do they mean. Thank you to Riders for Helmets for everything they do for helmet awareness and safety. You can visit them at riders4helmets.com. And thank you to Charles Owen. You can visit them at charlesowen.co.uk. Back next week with the amazing story of a woman who survived a very tragic fall thanks to her helmet.
And it was a big weekend here in Kentucky. I went to the National Horse Show, which was fantastic, and I missed that last year. And so it was fun to go this year. It's the second year they've had it here at the Alltech Indoor Arena, which they built, you know, purpose-built for the WEG, which you were at, John, commentating for FEI TV. And it was actually lovely. I took the children. We had fun. It's heated, which was nice because it was freezing. We saw top-class jumping, world-class, you know, like a World Cup qualifier. We saw the puissance. It was really, really exciting. So I'm glad I got to see that. And then meanwhile, up in the north in Canada, they had the Royal Winter Fair. And we're going to speak to Doug Payne, who did the indoor eventing there, which is, I think, somewhat similar to the express eventing that you do in England. And also Clayton Fredericks was competing up there. And I think that's the first time he's been to Canada since he's been named as the coach starting in January. And he was rather diplomatic. He let the Canadians win and came third, but also put on a good show. So, and it sounds like it's a big party there all week. And let's talk to Doug.
Hey, how's it going?
Well, thanks. And you?
Well, it's a bit dark here still.
Oh, poor you. Well, thank you so much for doing this.
Oh, no worries. No, I mean, it's totally fine. We got nothing better to do. We're 6 o'clock, it's pitch black. And, you know, they're saying, I mean, we live in the center of Gladstone. They're saying about another week or so. And then where the barn is, they're saying probably Thanksgiving before we get power back.
Oh, my goodness.
That's crazy. Just the quantity of wires and trees and all that down, it's unbelievable.
Were you tempted to stay in Canada longer?
I would have loved to. Financially, that was not going to be a smart decision, but...
Is that why Jess left her papers behind? Was that a
Absolutely, yeah. She wanted me to leave her at the border.
Subconscious.
it was funny. Yeah, she's a dual citizen, and she lost her U.S. passport, and she did the same thing, actually, at Roma and had no trouble, but when he came back here... You know, he said, "Where do you live?" And she's like, "Oh, I live in, you know, New Jersey now." And he's like, "Do you have any proof of your U.S. citizenship here?" She's like, "Nope." That's good. Yeah. But they were able to pull it up, and it was all good.
I was hoping that you were going to tell me you'd come back and everything was back to normal, but far from it.
Yeah, not even close. We're very lucky to get out, and not a whole lot has changed in this local area, but. Like I said, we're a whole lot luckier than many. So we're out of power, I think. I live in the center of Gladstone, and we're about another week or so out from there. And then the barn, they're staying probably up to Thanksgiving before power's restored. But, I mean, it's staggering. We didn't actually have all that much rain, but they had so much wind. I mean, they're sort of 4 or 5 foot diameter trees just uprooted. And, I mean, just the drive to the barn from town is maybe 10 minutes, and you're... I can only take a car. I couldn't take a truck because the wires are still draped across the road. And it's basically untouched since the storm just because they're focusing on the infrastructure bit near the cities more so. But we've got a house and, we've got a wood-burning stove going now and we're in decent shape.
You did a great podcast the morning you left for the Royal, you did it on your way up there. And sounded like you were lucky to get out, that, you know, there happened to be one road and quite an amazing story about the vets sort of all banding together to help you get out by email through phoning, you know, luckily.
Yeah,
really
and like I said, generally, those guys don't have much of a sense of humor, the feds or the guys from the USDA. But of course, our New Jersey offices are actually south of here about an hour. We're about an hour directly west of New York City. And, so they were pretty hard hit down there. So of course everything was shut down, and we ended up having to, we nearly broke out the minibike actually get to our vet clinic, which is only about 5 minutes from here, but just finding a roadway to get there was near impossible. But got the paper signed and then talked to some the USDA people out in New York, and they were able to email it off the iPad and approve it. And then they scheduled a meeting for me with an inspector in Niagara Falls that could stamp it for us. So we were very, very lucky, and there was only one way out from this whole area, and it just happened to be that our farm was accessible. My sister went down to Virginia Horse Trials, and she actually had to ride her horse down to my place and then borrow a trailer to get out, because there's no way that they're getting a trailer out of their place anytime soon.
So tell, how many horses did you leave behind? And you've still got no power at the barns and won't have until Thanksgiving.
Yeah, no, I mean, we're very lucky. We've got generators running there. Just extremely lucky that the people we rent the farm from have pretty much every toy that you can imagine. So we do have power there and water. And so as long as you can get to the barn, you're in good shape. But we have, where we're at, 14 or so that probably remain. And Michelle, who's been working with us for a while now, held the fort down, and she does a great job looking after them all. So lucky to have her around with us.
And you have a wood-burning stove, but as you said, it's now beginning to get dark earlier, and you've got nothing else to do but talk to me, for which I'm quite grateful.
Well, hopefully don't take offense to that. But yeah, no, we are we're actually over at my parents' place because they have a stove. We don't have to eat at our place in town, and so we're just cooking some dinner and by candlelight, and going from there. But luckily, self-service is up and running.
It sounds almost romantic. Are you pretty good in these situations? I know you're quite sort of a tech geek, and you have all that engineering.
Well, I tell you what, we're just lucky that the cell service has remained, because it's spotty in general in this area, but it's remains sort of up and live throughout the storm, and it saved me a number of times. I mean, that allowed us to get up to the rail, and we actually, in the process, I think we, fingers crossed, have a horse sold, but I ended up having to actually stop to the vet clinic today and upload the x-ray images to email to their vet, because there's no power or phone lines getting out of the clinic. Wow. So technology is, it's funny, when you're without it, you certainly miss it, but we've found some workarounds to allow us to keep going.
Well, let's talk about the Royal. Did it ever occur to you, with everything going on, not to go?
If I could get out, I was going to go. I've been there now, the past 4 years, including this, three or four years, something like that. But it's, for everyone listening there, it's certainly a place that you need to go at some point. I don't know really if I can adequately describe the scale of, and the entirety of it, really. I mean, it's like the largest 4-H fair you've ever seen. So they have chickens, bunnies, alpacas, sheep, goats, pigs, whatever, all the way up, obviously the horses, and then they've got driving from little ponies to Clydesdales and Bertrands, and then, on the show side of it, they'll have rodeo and dressage, jumping, indoor eventing, I'm sure I'm missing some here, vaulting, I don't know what else. Pretty much anything you could do with an animal, it's going to be there, and it's right smack in the center of Toronto, like the indoor eventing, I think there's some Patricia from EcoGold put up some videos and give you a decent idea, but it's in a hockey stadium, and they lay down footing, and so there's 9,000 people screaming and yelling, and it's just great fun.
I watched your video. I wanted to ask you first, how do you get to go? Is it by invitation, or do you apply and enter?
Invitation only. So I was lucky to be selected, and the main sponsor, his name is Don Good, and I got to thank him again. He basically funds this entire operation, and without his support, we obviously would not be out there. And I think it's a tremendous competition. It's a great venue to be. Obviously, you get so much exposure, but I think it really does portray the sport well. And Don has actually owned a bunch of horses for Jesse Phoenix, and yeah. Her gold medal horse there was owned by him.
That's so, right, Pavarotti.
I know there's a few others, I wouldn't know their names off the top of my head, but he's a big supporter of Canadian eventing and just the sport in general.
Well, I was interested because I know that Jess had taken Pavarotti there, I think last year or the year before, and said, what a great experience. And to me, I mean, it looked like madness. And I wondered how you decide which horse to take and how they react to that.
Well, I'll be totally blunt with you. Two years ago, I brought Crown Talisman this year, and he was fourth at Fair Hill this fall in the two-star. And he actually, I brought him 2 years ago. And I think it is a lot, and horses all respond different ways, but the nice thing about it, I mean, it's very loud, luckily you're permitted some help in that you can have, earplugs in, because it's very loud. So I think near enough to every competitor, puts the earplugs in just so it's a little less noisy. But the nice thing is actually when you're competing, the arena is very brightly lit, but the surrounding stands are all in darkness. So the horses, I think it's a lot to go in, especially your first time. But generally, once you get going, they all lock in, and they're all in, really impressively good. You wouldn't expect as you walk in the stadium for them to be as focused as they are, but I think it's a tremendous benefit, and it's a huge help in the future, because you figure you go to Kentucky or go over to Europe, and you're going to find places with massive crowds, and some horses do get distracted initially, and this is a great opportunity to put them in that situation and allow them to learn that ultimately it's not a big deal for them.
And did you find that Tally, he noticed a difference now 2 years later?
Yeah, he was a lot better. I mean, he was tremendous 2 years ago, just because he was ultimately he was pretty inexperienced. He had done a couple prelims, and the course this year was certainly more difficult than in years past, especially the first night. They had a corner that was set up, and he ended up jumping three ways, and two of the ways that we did it, you sort of wrapped around the backside of it. It was very narrow. And he was just dead honest to it, and really quite good. I think it's a great learning experience for him. And I would. It's also a huge benefit to have a horse that's been there before. Like Wayland's done so well there, and that horse that won this year, I think, has won two prior years. So, once you got one that's going well, you really should probably stick with him.
Waylon's pretty much unbeatable, I think.
Yeah, he puts up a good fight, that's for sure. I will do my best next year to take him down, but it's all in great fun, though. I mean, every rider, regardless of what place you end up, I think has a great time.
And I'm a pretty big fan of Doug Payne Equestrian. I listen to your podcast, and I've read your blog, seen you on Facebook. You didn't pick that music, did you?
I did not. I did not.
That's really...
Unfortunately, yeah, we have no control over the music. But I do have, it's in the works now. I had a camera on the second night, the night that we go through the keyhole. You jump through a keyhole in both directions, and it's quite a small gap, and it should give everybody a pretty good feel of what it's all about.
Oh, God, helmet cam will be great. I look for, because it looked like you were just going around in teeny tiny circles very fast. So
it's a tight. I mean, ultimately, it's a hockey arena, so it's I don't know, for those out there listening, maybe have gone to Virginia horse trials, and it's probably, my guesstimate is about half the size of that Coliseum. I mean, it's quite small.
Yeah, I think, and as John Carl said, it's like the Olympia Stadium, not Stuttgart. It's pretty small. If that's for international listeners.
Yeah, and it was actually interesting because Clayton was up there, Frederick's riding, and I was asking him what how it compares to the Express Eventing and some of the other ones that he would have seen over there, and he said it near enough on par with them, and like I said, you only see video, so it's always a little hard to tell on film what it's like until you're there in person.
And it's you're up there for a few days, and obviously I'm sure you enjoy yourselves. It's sort of the end of the season, some partying going on, I'm guessing.
You certainly give your liver a good workout. The Canadians really know how to put on a good party, and it's always great fun after that. So we ride actually quite late. It's sort of the headline competition for the night. So I think the first night we were at 10, and then the second night we started at 8. But Italy's actually quite fun because they've got the Canadian National Championships show jumping going on at the same time. So a bunch of us, you know, ride and then go on and watch the show jumping. And then Don is very generous, puts on a party afterwards both nights. And, yeah, we were... We're out quite late, so I was happy to have daylight savings kick in, give us an extra hour to sleep on Sunday. No, it's great fun. And like you said, it's the perfect sort of cap to the end of the year as far as our competitive, you know, riding-wise.
And what will Tally do now? Does he have a rest, Crown Talisman?
Yeah, he'll have a vacation now. He was on... He actually had quite a light fall. He had an injury at Millbrook where he got a... basically like a heel grab, but it was on his pastern, and it was pretty nasty. We've got some pictures up on the blog, actually, and healed up really well, but it just took us out, so he actually didn't have a run up until Fair Hill. He went sort of cold right into Fair Hill, and so figured, yeah, we'll do the Royal here, and then we'll give him a few weeks, and start up in December or so, but just do flat work until we get down to Aiken, which will be right around the first of the year. But it was actually interesting. We were on the way home, you know, Jeff and I were talking just about the experience at the Royal, and I think both of us wholeheartedly agree that it's, you know, it's just a really great learning experience at the same time. I mean, it's good fun, of course, but having such a tight venue to go and ride in, I think a lot can be learned from it. So,
yeah.
Great fun.
Do you, and now how do you let the horses down, like Trevor and Talisman? Do you hack them or do you turn them straight out or will, I mean, and?
Yeah, I try and keep them out as much as possible. I mean, these guys, as long as the weather permits, you know, I try to keep them out, you know, again, as long as they're happy, not 24 hours. And we'll basically probably just let them down for real. Tally's had a, you know, he had basically a week off after Fairy Hill and they just had a little light workout. Of course, Sandy put a damper on some of that, but yeah, so he's had a little bit of a step down, and like I said, he'll just hang out now for the next, you know, 3 or 4 weeks, and we'll just start off probably walking, and by the end of December, being, you know, basically light flat work, and by January, we'll kick it to real gear.
And I just have to ask, how did Holly do it, Virginia?
Yeah, she did well. I think she went into show jumping doing... don't quote me on the placing. I think she was in the top three for sure. And I think she unfortunately had a rail or two that knocked her down a few. But it was that horse's first intermediate. And like I said, the hurricane really put a damper on any sort of preparation whatsoever. So I know she was very happy with him. It's a very promising horse, actually, that she's got. And, you know, I would think that he's going to have a great spring next year.
Great. Well, thank you so much for talking to us and for catching us up on all the news and telling us all about the Royal. Definitely have to put that on my wish list. It's a busy.
You'll have to add it. Yeah, add it to your list for sure because it's certainly something to see. And yeah. And I tell you what, the trade fair there. I mean, it's tremendous shopping. It's the, you know, certainly the biggest by far. That I would say maybe it's comparable to Kentucky. Maybe it's even larger. I mean, it's massive. I mean, it's
wow.
Just. To put a scale on it, it's difficult.
Great. Well, thanks again, and good luck with the electricity, and we'll speak to you soon.
Yeah, well, thanks.
Thanks.
All right, talk to you soon. Yeah, thanks.
Do you have a company in the horse world? Are you looking to get the word out about your products, services, or shows? At the Horse Radio Network, we understand our advertisers need to reach the equestrian consumer in the most efficient, cost-effective way possible. Internet radio shows like this one, also called podcasts, allow the flexibility and creativity to craft unique messages that stand out from the herd and reinforce your existing marketing and social media strategies. If you want to learn more about advertising on this show or any of our shows on the Horse Radio Network, contact our account manager, Lisa, at 847-790-4476. That's Lisa at 847-970-4476, or you can drop her an email at lisa@horseradionetwork.com. Our listeners are terrific, engaged, and avid horse people, the ones that you are looking for.
It was great to hear from Doug there about that really exciting indoor eventing competition up at the Royal Winter Fair in Canada. Interesting, you know, Clayton's getting up there on his horse. We're hearing, of course, that he's going to be winding back his top-level competition career now to focus on his coaching. I think interesting times ahead for the Canadians. I think they've landed a good one there.
I think you're right, too.
And talking about Clayton there, in my own side of the fence, we've got the Irish have just announced that at the end of the Olympic cycle, they're advertising their high-performance manager job in both show jumping and eventing. I think it's a process more than that they're necessarily looking for somebody else. But, you know, you never know who might come out of the woodwork, who at the end of an Olympic cycle has decided, yeah, maybe it's time to half hang up the boots and, you know, might want to take care of a team into the next Olympiad. So that's quite interesting. Ginny obviously, you know, had some great results at the Olympics, particularly with Aoife Clark's top 10 finish and the three through to the final jumping round. So interesting times.
Watch this space. Well, thank you to our guests this week. Please visit our homepage and we'll put links on that to their websites and social media pages. You can subscribe to the Eventing Radio Show via iTunes to make sure that you don't miss a single episode. And please check out our Facebook page too. Just look for Eventing Radio Show and feel free to post comments. You can also follow us on Twitter. I'm at Samantha L. Clark and John is at John Kyle Speaks. Please support Bit of Britain at bitofbritain.com. Enjoy your eventing. Come back next week and thank you for listening.